Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for this 82nd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. Today, my guest is Claire Morin. She was born in Blackburn, Lancashire, England, raised in Hong Kong among 7.2 million other Hong Kongers, and has made her home in Portland, Maine since 2009. She's a writer, storyteller, editor, publicist, and meditator. Thank you so much for joining me here today, Claire.
Thank you so much for having me. A joy.
Oh, terrific. Well, here you are with a microphone in hand. So you are my very first guest from Hong Kong, and otherwise known as Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of the People's Republic of China. Not too long a name. It's definitely a rival for the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Yes.
I would love it if you could flesh out my understanding of Hong Kong and tell me what it was like growing up there as a kid, born to UK parents and living in Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And there's some funny parallels between Portland and Hong Kong. Because, you know, it's originally a fishing village. Hong Kong Island itself is like 30 square miles. It's pretty tiny. And then you've got the Kowloon Peninsula, which borders onto mainland China. And then you have like 300 islands. And so for, thousands of years, it was just this fishing village. Maybe I'll give you like the quick history.
Oh, please do. That would be helpful.
Which I've been really deeply researching lately in my writing. 1830s, you have the Opium War. And so Hong Kong's story is very, very sort of important story, I think, for our understanding of the world now and colonialism. And so, so you had the British in India, and they wanted tea from China and silver and silk. And the Chinese at the time actually were quite self-sufficient and didn't really want to trade with England. And they used to send trade, you know, delegations, just like they're doing today. It's not a great, I think, thing in Britain's history, this story, but they were taking, you had the East India Company, these merchants taking opium into China and selling it. And of course, the emperor in China was like, this isn't great for our society. It was legal in England at the time, wasn't in China. And they basically stood up to the English, and a bit like Boston here, they threw 30,000 chests of opium into the harbour, and it started the Opium War, which England won because they had the Industrial Revolution. And then Britain got Hong Kong. So it was this built on this strange kind of drug deal gone wrong. and then it became this trading post for the British, and it grew, and it's become actually, the financial centre of the region. It's an astonishing place. It was also an important place during China's history, a lot of immigrants coming in, escaping Cultural Revolution, a lot of the smartest minds in China going into Hong Kong. So it's got this really rich, amazing, huge number of people and tiny amount of land. So I grew up there. I went there when I was two.
So you went to school and
my dad was a civil servant working in Blackburn, England. And he got a job out there as an architect. My mum was a teacher. So my brother was four and I was two, and we all moved to Hong Kong and had a very blessed existence, very privileged, lucky existence. And, went to an international school, and it's like awful because I never properly learnt Cantonese, which is English was strangely the official language until the mid-70s there. So everything was in English and bilingual. So I grew up in this bubble, this expat kind of bubble, left when I was 18, and I went to university in England, studied literature, philosophy, and then I came back, and then I was like, this is just wrong. Like, I need to. I'm a Hong Kong person. In England, I had crazy culture shock because I was like, I'm not English. I don't know any cultural references these people are talking about. And like, I had this real identity crisis. Came back to Hong Kong and I got a job as a journalist for the newspaper and magazines. And I was, it was my mission to try and bridge that bubble. I worked there as an arts writer mainly until I married my Mainer husband, the amazing drummer and carpenter Tim, and we came here. And I'm still trying to reconcile that history. So I'm finally studying my Mandarin here and connecting with a lot of the Chinese community in Portland, actually.
Yes, that's wonderful. I bet people are surprised that you are a Chinese speaker.
Well, I'm not particularly. I'm still learning. Hopefully I will be. And give me 5 years and I'll have Mandarin down. And then I'm going to go back to Cantonese because it's a very difficult language, but it's an amazing language. But they're definitely confused when they meet me because they immediately people will say, where are you from? You know, and then I kind of launch into this 5 minute short story because I don't just want to say I'm English. I'm from, because I feel like I'm kind of not telling the truth because I was born there, but I am really from Hong Kong. That's kind of home. England's home too. And now Maine.
And in Hong Kong, is Buddhism the preferred religion or the dominant religion?
That's a good question. I don't know what the dominant religion is. I have a feeling it might actually be Christianity but it's a very free, open society. This is an amazing thing about Hong Kong. Until 2047, hopefully, it will retain a lot of freedoms. So you do have the world's biggest Buddha in Hong Kong, which is this huge statue on Lantau Island you can see from the moon. But many different religions there, yeah. But that is where I stumbled across Buddhism.
Yeah, and so you have a Buddhist practice here. Are your parents Buddhists?
No. But they love that I am. They're so encouraging. I guess they're, Catholic. I was, baptized, is it? Anyway.
That's what they call it, yeah.
Okay, uh-huh. Yeah. So they're not Buddhist, no.
So tell us about your practice, your Buddhism.
Yeah, that, I love it. It keeps me sane. It's so beneficial, the practice of meditation. And I stumbled across it in 2004 in Hong Kong when I was going through my identity crisis. And also, frankly, I was stressed out. I was working at a newspaper, I had deadlines. And I kind of realized, I tried a few different things, Qigong, Tai Chi, all these different things. And then I was like, I need to sort out my mind. My mind's just running around. And I fortuitously saw this advert for a study program in a Buddhist center. I went there and this monk was teaching, and it was funny for me because he had a kind of a Yorkshire accent. He was a Chinese monk, looked like Buddha but spoke like a Northern English person because he went to school there. So it was a weird moment for me, but yeah, it's something I deeply study actually, and it influences my life in many ways. Just it's like how to try and be a better human, I think.
And you practice in the center here? Continue that practice?
Yeah, when we moved here, I was saying to Tim, my husband, I don't really mind where we land as long as I'm near a Buddhist center, and my tradition has centers all around the world, so I knew I'd be fairly safe. And the winds of karma just brought us to Portland, Maine. We started in Massachusetts, and we just drifted here. And I wrote to the center in Massachusetts, the nearest one in my tradition, and asked, can you send a teacher? So they did. The resident teacher, a nun at the time, used to come up. And then she asked me, would I teach each week? And it's a voluntary thing, like you're doing. You do it because you love it. And it's wonderful. So we do two classes a week here, around the corner, actually, in a yoga space. We kind of rent it a couple of hours.
Is that open to the public?
It is.
How do people find that?
Yeah, it's called Tsalingpa Meditation Center. And I guess it's meditationinmaine.org.
I'll link to it on the website so people can find it after this.
It's all done, you know, the whole thing. Geshe Kelsang Gyatso is my teacher, Tibetan monk, who's basically translated everything to many languages around the world, and sharing ancient wisdom about the mind and building compassion, and sharing it in a way it's very accessible. So anyone, any background can come along.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. Mm. You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Claire Morin, who was born in the UK to British parents, but moved to Hong Kong at the age of 2 and was raised there. She later married a Mainer and is now an arts writer, editor, and student of Buddhism here in Portland, Maine. So what were your first impressions of life in America after being a cosmopolitan Hong Konger?
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about this, and I came when I was very young. I think we went to Disneyland or something, but when San Francisco or something. And when I was, how old, like 19 or so, 98, I came one summer to visit Tim. We'd met in England. He was drumming with a band in England, and we nearly got married the first time. We have a lovely long love story, but that summer I came over here, and I think I was telling you earlier, when I got to Boston, I was struck. I thought I was in the future. I really felt like I was in the future. And you have to remember, this is before the internet really kicked off, so it was less immediate. Now I think now we're all in the same reality, more and more, maybe not everyone, more and more people. But at the time, and I think the future feeling was how extraordinarily multicultural it is in America. And it's so wonderful how everyone's from somewhere else. and everyone's kind of joined in that. And it's beautiful, I think. I felt like the future because it thought, you know, the world's maybe going in that direction, you know?
I do. It does seem to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So to whom or what do you attribute your success here in Portland? You've been here since 2009 and you just continue to flourish. And what is it that makes that possible?
I say definitely the kindness of others. So began with family. I have to say, of all the people you've interviewed, and I think also your kindness needs to be pointed out, because my goodness, you've just done this so consistently. And I was lucky because I married a Mainer who knew what to do in the winter, right? What socks to wear to stay warm.
You have to learn,
so many things that would have been baffling if I hadn't married into a Maine family. But my family is so wonderful. They're up in Bangor. And Tim's friends that we, you know, kind of came and found an apartment. And then it was, for me, extraordinary people here who are opening the door to new people from outside of Maine and outside the world, outside America. So the Telling Room is where I really started to unlock Portland for me, which of course is this extraordinary writing center, right?
I love the Telling Room.
Yeah.
It's down on Commercial and it has Street. A beautiful view and perspective on Portland.
Yeah, and it was set up by these amazing writers, they just won an award last week, I think, at the White House for their programs for teenage immigrants. But anyway, I was a writer and I was like, hey, there's this place I can just go to, and it was so inviting. It's really hard actually when you get here to know where to go. And that Telling Room, I met Susan Connolly, who's this extraordinary writer, and ended up doing some work with her, and then she helped connect me with all these different people. And then so that was kind of the first family, and then the Telling Room, and then she introduced me to Suzanne Fox, who's an extraordinary China hand, who's lived in Maine many years, and speaks wonderful Mandarin. And I was so excited to meet Suzanne, because here is this woman who's spent like 30 years working between the US and China, doing all these educational programs, partnerships. And I got to do some projects with her, and I felt so lucky because I kind of landed here. It's funny because most people get here and they're trying to assimilate to here, and I was trying to assimilate to American life. I had the language down, it wasn't too hard, but I was still trying to assimilate to Hong Kong, right? I was trying to learn my Chinese. I had this like delay of really assimilating to the place I grew up in. So the fact that Suzanne was doing all this amazing work really helped me survive and do projects. And so I think there's people, it's so important what you're doing, what Telling Room's doing, what people like Suzanne are doing, opening the door so that people can talk about their experiences, you know, being new here. It's so important. Yeah.
Thank you for that vote of support. It's very kind. I appreciate it. So how or why did you become a writer in the first place? These projects you're doing for Suzanne Fox are writing projects, correct?
Well, actually, with her, it's been kind of through my art writing. So we've done some work with Maine College of Art, connecting them with some art colleges in China and Hong Kong. And I've helped her doing some art programs. She's a real supporter of the arts. Yeah, so, and then with some other people, I've been working kind of a publicist for artists and writers because I worked as a journalist for 10 years as an arts writer. So I kind of know how the journalists think. And I think that's helped me package people a bit, put together their media kits and stuff. And then I do all my writing. And I've, weirdly enough, when I was in Hong Kong, I used to live on an island called Lama. It's a bit like Peaks Island. There's no cars, though. And a lot of chickens. And I used to get my ferry into Hong Kong. And I feel like I could still actually be living on Lama because a lot of my work is still in Hong Kong. The art scene there is very thriving right now. And I'm doing a lot of editing and writing, interviewing over Skype. I don't remember what your question was.
Do you have to get up in the middle of the night to Skype with people?
Not so much. I tend to get up very early anyway, so I tend to do mornings. But it is a 12-hour time difference. Yeah,
that's tricky.
It is, yeah.
Were you one of those little girls who always was picking up a pencil and paper and writing little stories?
Yes.
Yeah, you just seem like that kind of person.
It's
authentic.
You know, I think I was short-sighted too. I think they figured it out quite late because my mum had like this guilt attack in the opticians when they were like, oh, your child needs glasses. So I was always reading books. I don't think I was... it wasn't that pronounced. But I do have this memory. Before I could, you know, joined up writing. Do you have that here where you learn how to write?
A style of teaching writing?
Yeah, I guess where all the little letters are joined up. Anyway, I remember cursive? Before I could do that, yes. Mm-hmm. Just sitting, filling notebooks with this nonsensical stuff. And my mum was is an extraordinary teacher. She specializes in the language. So I was bound to be a writer with her around. Yeah.
That's lovely. And you say that storytelling is an important part of your life. When you're writing, are you doing storytelling with your writing or do you also speak storytelling?
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out what I do. I really don't know what I do, to be honest. I'm making it up as I go along. And when I was in Hong Kong, I'd studied literature. I love writing and then I very luckily landed this job at first as an intern, an arts writer for this free magazine, a bit like the Phoenix. And I soon found that I love hearing artists talk, hearing their stories. I think I probably wanted to study art, but I couldn't. So, and I like trying to capture what people are saying and try to write that.
Put it in a context.
Yeah.
I think that's really helpful. Often needs a little interpretation.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by people and artists. And so I've continued doing a lot of, I've just had a book project this past year where I've been invited. I can't say too much about it. It's kind of under wraps, but it's going to be amazing.
Of course
I didn't write the whole thing. I wrote a few chapters. And I got to go very in-depth into a few Hong Kong artists' lives with a lot of history research. And I realized that to tell history, like to tell stories of history, we need to tell human stories because we understand human stories. We don't understand 20,000, like all these statistics. We don't get it. But when you hear about one person talk about their experience doing something, you understand, right? And you get it.
Yes.
And you could get compassion going, right? Because you're like, I can relate to you. You're human.
I have same needs.
Right. And so that's why I feel like what you're doing, what Telling Room's doing, is so important, particularly right now in the world. We need to know the stories, don't we?
Capturing a variety of stories.
Yeah,
to tell
because
the big story.
Media can, I don't know, I think the media can just kind of get in the way a bit sometimes of all this. I was listening the past few days. I just sat and listened to many of the interviews you did on this show. And it was so extraordinary just to listen to their stories. And you had this someone from France, right, recently. And in the light of what's been happening in Paris, to hear his story of being an immigrant in a neighborhood that was tough in Paris, you know, you get all this realizations coming. And I think it's important.
I feel like it's a bit like geodes. Do you know geodes? No. Is rocks that are dusty and they look like a round, just plain old clump of rock.
Mm-hmm.
And if you whack them with a hammer, they open up. And inside is a crystallized gem cave.
Yes.
And I think people are kind of like that. You can walk right by a fabulous musician.
Yeah.
And he might have looked kind of dowdy and less than
beautiful.
And yet he is beautiful. You see him sit down at the piano and you realize there's so much I can't see.
Yes.
And I think when you tell stories, you find out, wow, you grew up in a really violent neighborhood, or wow, you grew up with a lot of Chinese children, or you know, whatever your story was. And you can't tell by looking. You have to actually listen to the story.
And also, I bet you find this, that people probably say to you, I don't have a story to tell, right? And then they'll probably start telling it. And you're just going, oh my goodness, this is extraordinary experience. I'm sure at the Telling Room, this happens all the time with the refugees telling what they've been through. That changes you, doesn't it? Hearing that in person.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your salon type group that you've helped to start called Yaji?
Yes, Yaji. So this
Yaji.
Is Suzanne Fox, Fox Intercultural Consulting, her company. I was very lucky doing some work with her, and she is great because she is always encouraging me. And she's like, you're an arts writer, you know, what can we do? What kind of events? And we came up with this idea, Yaji, which means elegant gathering is the direct translation. It's from the Song Dynasty. So all these poets and scholars and literati would get together and drink tea and maybe a bit of rice wine, I think. and they'd talk and they'd listen to music and they'd debate. Yeah. And so we thought, oh, let's create a Yaji here in Portland. And May Selvage, the amazing artist you had on the show from Sichuan province in China, she was actually our first speaker. And she told her story of growing up in the Cultural Revolution and coming as an immigrant here and showing her art, which is extraordinary, very Buddhist inspired. And that was beautiful, wonderful. And then I think the next one we did was two Taiwanese women who'd lived in Maine for like 20 years, Liao Wen at Mecca, head of sculpture, performance artist, kind of installation artist, really cool work. And then Shang Wai Ping, I'm getting a name wrong probably, she's living down in Berwick, Maine, Xiaoping Wang. She does these extraordinary maps. The talk they did, it was so amazing because she showed the maps, which on one level she had Taipei, where she grew up, and then she had Flushing, Queens, I think, in New York, where she spent some time, and then she had Berwick, Maine, and they were layered on top of each other.
Brilliant.
And that is the immigrant mind. It's many different places in one mind. And she was showing everyone, and everyone was so moved. And then Lao Wen does these, she was doing amazing performance art when she came to the US, where she was playing with how people were imputing Chinese person on her. She was a Taiwanese. She's like, I'm not Chinese, actually. I'm native Taiwanese, which isn't Chinese. It's like, and yeah, so anyway, she does amazing work too. And that night was wonderful. There was actually a guy from New York City, Chinese-American young guy who just kind of popped into Think Tank where the event was happening by accident. I think he was having a meeting and he just stopped and stayed. And at the end, he was really moved and he was thanking the artists. And he was saying he felt like he understood his mother better hearing their stories. And yes, we were realizing that showing art is a very good way to show this process of assimilation that an immigrant goes through.
And absolutely.
Yeah, the third one we did was with Lady Zen, who's this extraordinary hip-hop artist who's Buddhist, actually, and Frank Smith, the writer, novelist, and Ni Rong, who is a great photographer from Rockland, Maine, and they all spoke at Mecca. That was wonderful, too. So
this is a wonderful organization you've managed to
help
with. Well,
it's not me. To be honest, Suzanne's funded the entire thing. She's quite a philanthropist. So she helped make all this happen. So
we'll link to that on the website,
yeah,
too, for interested
sure.
parties. Claire, you are such a joy to be around. It makes me wonder, what if everyone meditated? You're doing such significant work connecting East and West, and your bright energy is a delight to witness. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Claire Morin, and we will close today's program with a song she's chosen for us. Wondered if you could tell listeners why you chose this song today before we go.
Yes. So this is Urna, also known as Urna Chaha Tukchi from Mongolia, who is extraordinary. I happened upon her CD in Macau, near Hong Kong. So she grew up in the plains in Mongolia, and this is her singing her grandmother's songs.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.